This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Plenty to talk about in politics this week. Charismatic former congressman from El Paso, Beto O'Rourke, wants to be our next president. And many are wondering if and when Joe Biden will officially join the 2020 race. And divisions among Democrats. Party members wrestle over remarks made by freshman Democrat Ilhan Omar. And there's a question of whether to impeach Donald Trump. But first, the Senate voted to block Donald Trump's national emergency declaration yesterday. 12 Republicans joined Democrats in saying the president had overstepped his authority. Not in that number is North Carolina Republican Tom Tillis. He voted for the president despite an earlier announcement that he thought the president was wrong. Joining us to go over this and much, much more, the political junkie Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
Frank, I love the fact that I'm going to be on the show for 2 hours. There's so much to talk about.
We're going to do it. Let's call. Okay, why don't we call Robin in Boston and say we're going a little long today? It's going to be fun. Listen,
great.
59 to 41, as Stephen Colbert said, Donald Trump hasn't lost that badly since he was elected president. Stephen Colbert, ladies and gentlemen.
I love it.
But listen.
But you know something?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, yes, Trump was a loser in this vote, absolutely. The House has already voted overwhelmingly against him as well. The Senate followed. Of course, he doesn't, in the end, I don't think he loses because he will veto the legislation, and Congress does not have the votes to override the veto. But this is the first time, well, this is a two-pronged story, but this is the first time that the Republicans have shown any backbone in standing up. Look, Trump went to the Congress, asked for money for the border wall. Congress said no. He said, okay, I'm going to do it anyway. If you're a believer in the Constitution, if you're a constitutional conservative, you should say, look, this is wrong, and that's why exactly 12 Republicans said, look, I support my president, but I'm not going to vote to give him powers that the Congress, that it's up to the Congress to have. And then all among those 12, or thought to be among those 12, which would have been 13, is Tom Tillis, who wrote this big op-ed in the Washington Post, I believe in separation of powers, the president is overreaching, the same thing we criticized Barack Obama for doing, Trump is doing, and I'm going to join these Republicans in standing up to the president until the actual vote.
What happened? Because this is, he expressed his conscience, in my conscience, in my heart, this is the right thing to do, vote against the president, and then he voted against his conscience, I guess. What happened?
Well, I mean, there were several things. First of all, he did get called, I think, from Vice President Pence. He did get calls from people close to the president. The president has already said Republicans who vote for this thing are, you know, part of the Nancy Pelosi left-wing conspiracy. But probably more important, even though Tillis denies this, probably more important is that he had been threatened with challenges, primary challenges, from the right wing of the party in 2020. He is one of those few, I mean, he's one of those senators up in 2020
right,
who just could not vote against the president. And given what we saw with Jeff Flake in Arizona and Bob Corker of Tennessee and others who dared to stand up to the president, he was fearful that a primary would have taken down or ended his career next year. So, you know, he did the most expedient thing, and he voted with the president.
Clearly, this vote, to vote against the president, would have been an existential threat to his political career. On the other hand, but he didn't say that, of course. What he said was, well, what did he say? Because he tried to explain it and said something like, well, I talked to the president, and they assured me, or the vice president, and the administration assured me this would not be a precedent. What he said?
Well, yeah, or a vice president.
Vice president.
That's exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, all the arguments he made in his op-ed why constitutionally and as part of Republican philosophy he would vote against this, he would vote for this measure that would stop the president from going beyond bypassing Congress. He just caved, and as you well remember, Frank, you know the last time a senator in North Carolina was defeated in the primary, right?
You'll have to remind me because it's been such a turbulent time.
It was B. Everett Jordan in 1972 by Nick Galifianakis. You know that.
Shortly
we all know that.
Shortly after I was born. And yet, No, but I mean, but that's the point, is that these are the look at the 2018 election, look at the state of North Carolina. We got a 9th congressional district that had been solidly and firmly bright red, where the Democrat would have won had it not been for alleged election fraud. Imagine that. There's a very high likelihood that a Democrat could have taken that victory. So in other words, things are changing, and if you're a Republican in this state, you can't take anything for granted.
Yeah, but again, somebody wrote a book, I forget who it was, but it was called Profiles in Courage, and basically it talked about members of Congress and members in government who just stood up for their principles and what they believed in. I think, you know, you talk about how this was a great defeat for President Trump.
That guy.
Yeah, I kind of think the real defeat was for Tom Tillis.
Well, if you can't remember John Kennedy's name, it's okay that you forget.
Oh, that's
guy.
Who it was. Well, yeah,
yeah, John Kennedy. He was quite a guy. But let me ask you this, because there is a court challenge as well. And to what extent, because the court is going to look at whether or not this was an emergency and whether or not the executive in this case had the right to use the executive power in this case, or whether it was abused. And it's going to be a court decision ultimately. The fact that Congress voted against it initially, the fact that there was no emergency before the vote against the money, right? Same problem, is going to certainly weigh heavily in the argument that the emergency emerged after Congress said, we're not giving you the money. And then Congress votes again to say, we're opposed to this. That does seem to speak to the heart of the issue in the law, written in the 1972 law, a concern that we don't want a king and we don't want a dictator, but we understand the executive needs some authority. That balance is written into the law. That's what the court's going to consider. And I wonder how this vote would play into the legal arguments, or maybe not.
Well, I think I certainly think it can very well play in the fact that they saw that both chambers of Congress, the House and Senate, including the Republican-controlled Senate, voted against this. But let's be honest here. I mean, this was this terrible emergency with all these caravans coming and invading our country that the president tweeted in every day until the 2018 elections. And then once the elections were over, those tweets stopped. So everybody seems to know, I mean, this is not a legal argument here, but a lot of people know that this was a political argument from the beginning to rile up his base. You know, when he came down that famous escalator at Trump Tower in 2015, he came down to talk about how Mexicans were sending rapists and murderers and drug people and some good people as well, some fine people as well. But the fact is that this is a political decision. I think everybody knows it. And it's almost painful to watch people like Mitch McConnell, who for the most part strongly advised Trump not to do this. And then when Trump says, I'm going to do it anyway, McConnell did everything he could to basically help the president along. And Lindsey Graham, who always called the president a faker and all these things, that he's a con artist. And then, of course, Lindsey Graham is fighting for the president as well. It's interesting that only Susan Collins, of all the senators who are up for re-election, Republican senators up for re-election, she is the only one who stood up for the president. Everybody else who may be in tough trouble, Tom Tillis, Martha McSally of Arizona, Cory Gardner of Colorado, they all caved and voted with the president.
And of course, you meant Susan Collins stood against the president, but I take your point. You're exactly right. So let's talk about now what the Democrats are doing, because they're all lining up, assuming the president is vulnerable in 2020. They're assuming that now. It may not be true, but they're making that assumption at the moment. Beto O'Rourke certainly announced his candidacy. Joe Biden is inching closer to a decision. What does all this mean for the Democrats? I mean, there's two ways to look at this, it seems to me, and I wonder what your take is. One is divided party, lots of dissension, could be disaster going into the 2020 election for the Democrats. On the other hand, could stir up a lot of excitement. And remember, I think there were more Republicans than Democrats challenging for the nomination in 2016. Look how that turned out. So what's your take on this?
That's a very, very good point. Look, for all the talk about the dissension in the Democratic Party, and there is dissension in the Democratic Party, as we saw in the resolution over anti-Semitism and Congresswoman Omar of Minnesota. But the fact is that obviously they think that the Democrats think that President Trump is vulnerable. Why else would 17 Democrats to be jumping in the race. I mean, you have six senators, you have a mayor, you have a governor, you have a former governor, you have a House member, you have two former House members, you have a cabinet official. I mean, everybody, it's a who's who in the Democratic Party. But ultimately, and again, we have plenty of time for this, and you're absolutely right, we had 16 or 17 Republicans, an unwieldy bunch in 2016, and the Republicans won their presidency. But ultimately, the Democratic Party is going to have to decide, do you want to nominate a candidate who's close to your heart, who represents things that you fervently believe in, you know, the excitement that Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or others like that instill in you, or do you want to win? And does winning mean that you need somebody more moderate? And do you vote against a woman? Did a woman lose? Did Hillary Clinton lose in 2016 because she was a woman or that woman? So there were so many things that are undecided that we won't know until we start seeing the debates in June. And then, of course, we're 10 plus months until Iowa and New Hampshire. But right now, the Democrats have a lot of different visions, a lot of different ways of seeing it. You know, there's the establishment wing. There's Democrats calling for impeachment. There's Nancy Pelosi saying no impeachment. You have Ocasio-Cortez, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying that we have to move way to the left and with the Green New Deal and all that like that. And then there are other Democrats in Trump areas and swing districts saying, wait a second, we moved so far to the left, we'll never win in 2020.
There we go. And ultimately, as we know, it will be the economy, Ken. In 2020.
Thank you for not calling me stupid.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie and a dear and charming friend. Ken, thanks so much. Always great.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, how North Carolina teenager is pushing boundaries on screen and in Hollywood. We'll meet Lachlan Watson from Netflix's Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.